Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executives After Hours. Me, Dr. James Kelly. To those of you checking this out for the very first time, I say thank you for your time, energy, and willingness to sit down and listen to these podcasts. So I'm trying not to throw up currently as I do this, so let's see if I can make it through. Today on the podcast, I have Miss Lisa McDonald. Lisa hails from Dundas, Canada. Ironically, a lot of my mom's cousins are in Dundas, which is not a big city. But more importantly, Lisa is a renowned book author. She has her own podcast called Living Fearlessly with Lisa. And we kind of dive right into some deep topics after parenting. We go straight into abuse as a kid. So she was abused, and another horrific story of someone taking the bad, making it good. And Lisa is all things energetic. So stay tuned for that. I'm really trying not to throw up. Please leave a review on iTunes. As always, I appreciate every last one of them. And be on the lookout this week. I'm going to be sending out an email with four possible book covers. So please select one. And happy to be part of the C-Suite Network. Engage me, Conscious Business Network, blah, blah. All right, everyone, have a great week. I'm going to go to the toilet now. And yeah, all right, see you. Good evening, Lisa. How are you?
Good evening to you. I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. It's 8 p.m. The chaos is quieting down at my house. About 10 minutes ago, packed lunches, finished the kitchen, cleaning the kitchen, and hugged kids goodbye. So,
aww. Yeah. What a good dad you are.
Oh, I try. I've got a long line of faults, but I do my best.
Don't we all? And don't we all try to do our best? Absolutely.
I know. I think parenting's interesting. I can't remember. Do you have kids?
I do. I have two, and I'm a single mom. I have two kids. Yeah, 8 and 7.
Oh, geez. So my oldest just turned, his birthday today is 9, and so my next one is 7, and her birthday was 3 weeks ago, and then. My next one turns 4 in about 5 weeks, and my youngest turns 2 in about 5 days.
Holy cow.
So I'm clearly was on a procreation cycle. as summer comes to an end, apparently I blossom and procreate. So
good for you. Well, I bet they're all lovely.
They are good kids. I can't say they're not. And any parent that says their kids are shitheads probably then has a slight finger to point at themselves at some point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but no, they're good kids. I mean, I think as you know, you don't know what you don't know. So
absolutely.
You know, like, do you find at each phase, and I'm sorry, did you say they were two girls?
No, I have my eldest, Quinn, is 8. He's a son, my son. And then my daughter, Olivia, who's 18 months behind him, just turned 7 March 6th. So,
oh, geez, yeah. It's like same as my kids almost. I mean,
yeah.
So, Dick, do you find each phase where you're like, I have it figured out? And then you're like, wait, what just happened?
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, I've come to expect and I've come to appreciate that every milestone, every age, you know, every year older brings its own different challenges and rewards, obviously. And so I'm within my social group, I had my children when I was older. I established my career and everything first. And so I've, you know, it's really funny to be friends with people who are the same age as me. And yet,
hey, they're Quinn, is that your grandma? Sorry.
That's okay. And, you know, and they're empty nesters. Their kids are off at university. And I'm thinking, God, I just started.
I have friends like that too.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you bastards.
Yeah.
But then they've got different headaches, right? They've got the issues with the drugs and their kids having sex. And what if my son comes home saying his girlfriend's pregnant and, you know, school dropout and, you know, so yeah. You know, keys to the car, drinking and driving. So it's you know, like I say, every age range brings its own set of, you know, go as you go manual.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's fun. I often, and I don't know what your thoughts are, but I often always say that I get pissed when people, like, we all judge. So fair enough. That's what we do as people. But I actually get really angry when single people judge my parenting.
Yes.
Because I'm always like, fuck off. You have a dog. Yeah. All right. So like, or a cat, like, give me a break. And I don't, and again, I love single people. I sometimes want to be single for like a weekend just to get away.
Yeah.
I get that, but don't judge me.
Right. Well, you know, everyone's an expert with something they have no fucking clue about, right? Yeah.
Yes, I'm an expert in many things that I have no idea about, but I think I'm right on point. I think I'm feeling pretty close. So now I was trying to, like, in my head, I was like, all right, now where's Lisa from? I know it's not London, Ontario. I know it's not Dundas, Toronto. Dundas. Yeah. I was trying to remember what it was before we started talking. And so Dundas.
You've got family.
I do.
You've got family here. Yeah, I remember talking.
So I was just trying to remember. I couldn't remember the exact place the family was when I told you. I was like, where is that place? So one of the things that I'm always interested in is, if you haven't figured out, I'm kind of going. So I just kind of jump into it. I don't do any like big intro. Yeah, I just talk.
So this is our
we're going.
Okay. Yeah. I love your style. This is awesome.
So, you know, in Dundas, the first thing I have to ask is, what the hell do you do there? That's the first thing. So, no, just – no, before that, though, so just so I have a kind of a better sense, because I know you're this book author, but what did you do before you started writing books?
Oh, wow. Well, I used to work in social services for 25 years in senior management, specifically crisis management. And so the last position that I held before I became a stay-at-home mom for 6 years, while still kind of keeping my hands in the pot with different things like sitting on boards, provincial boards and whatnot, I was a director of women's shelters out in Alberta. I lived there for 10 years before I came full circle and transplanted myself back here in Dundas in 2011 with my two children. And but for 25 years, I mean, I pretty much worked with every demographic, every population of people that fell within the isms, people who were disenfranchised, people who were marginalized, people who were oppressed, people
not an
who
ism.
Were,
that's not an ism. Yeah.
People who were that's okay. People who were abused. I get a lot of my gratitude from working with people who were in the shits and at their rawest and most vulnerable. And so, you know, working with people with disabilities as well, being mindful every single day of what not to take for granted, given the fact that I'm very blessed to be able-bodied. I have my health. My children have their health.
So you're compassionate, you know, right? Like, you have this level of compassion in you. So where does that come from? Because to do that type of job, I have one of my closest, I would say, friends, but we're guys, so closest friends means that when I'm in town, I'll call him and we'll go hang out. but I met him in a very trying point in my life, and same with him. And he's someone who, that's what he does. He helps the handicapped, the challenged, foster home kids. I mean, he does that, and he is amazing with it. And so I always wonder, people who are like that, like, what about it attracts you? Because it's such an emotional job.
It absolutely is. You know, when we initially spoke, James, behind the scenes quite some time ago, you know, you would know that I don't believe in coincidences. I really believe that oftentimes our darkest periods within our own lives, our own experiences, pretty much navigate the path that we feel that we're intended to be on. And so as a result of some unfortunate things that happened in my childhood, namely abuse, sexual abuse, you know, I always felt naturally drawn to people who are going through difficult times. And as I learned to empower myself, find my voice, stand up for myself, make good choices along the way, not always, but, you know, always aspiring to do so, and being very committed to my own growth and evolution of self, I just naturally fell upon the line of work that allowed me to advocate for other people, to help other people empower themselves, to find their own voices. And so, yeah, you know, you never know what life is going to throw at you. And I believe that a lot of it comes down to choice. I mean, we can wallow in self-pity, we can become victims in our life, or we can take the unfortunate things that have happened to us and find the lesson, find the gift.
But I don't think that you, I mean, you've ended up there, but that's not where you started.
Well, no, when I started, I was like, as most people, when they're sitting in crisis, I was in my own crisis. I, you know, and I didn't have a lot of support. And with abuse, particularly sexual abuse, you know, there's a lot of shame that's attached to that. It's still a very taboo subject.
So how old were you? Sorry, how old were you when that happened, if you don't mind me asking?
Four.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Four is when it started.
Was it the same pattern of like someone that knew your family?
It was my step-grandfather.
Wow.
Yeah. And fortunately, again, there's always a blessing. So, I mean, there's a lot. I look at the blessings of all of these things. And, you know, do I wish that I was sexually abused? Do I wish that upon anybody? No, I don't. But because I can't change what happened to me, and had that not happened to me, you know, would I still have cultivated the type of life that I chose for myself? Would I be as empathetic? Would I be as compassionate? Would I be as driven for other people's rights and being a staunch advocate? Maybe not, you know. You know, it's just something that I really feel really helped mold the kind of person that I actually can say that I'm proud to be today.
And so with that abuse, and how many years did it go on for?
It went on until I disclosed when I was 12. And see, the other thing, I kind of missed my point, but you just brought me full circle there. So fortunately for me, another gift within that was, unlike a lot of people who are sexually abused at the hands of people that they know, particularly family members, they lived in England. And so although we pretty much for many years saw each other every year, whether be summer. Usually it was summer. So we would take turns as a family, either going to England to visit them or they would come to us. And of course, you know, when you're traveling that distance, you don't come for anything less than a week and a half, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where kids would be very excited about, oh, school's done, I get to enjoy my summer. For me, it was a very different story.
Did your parents pick up on it?
No, I had, well, that's an interesting story. That part of that is in my first adult nonfiction book right now, which is on its own path with literary agents and whatnot, with the purpose of being published. Mm-hmm. My children's books prior to that, they've all been self-published. So, there's an element that touches upon that. My mom, it's funny because the last incident of abuse, I was old enough to realize that this was just not right. And yet I still didn't know what to do about it. And so I was very withdrawn. I had gone up to my bedroom. I was laying on my bed looking up at the ceiling. And I guess I'd been absent from the rest of the family for quite some time. My mom came upstairs to check on me. And she went through a whole laundry list of what she thought might be upsetting me. You know, did you have a fight with your brother? And we just come from her birthday party. It was a real shit show summer. This was the summer that my mom was going to be announcing to her mom and her stepfather, the abuser, that she and my dad were parting ways and that their marriage had dissolved. Again, the last incident of abuse happened on my mom's actual birthday at the table where we were celebrating my mom's birthday underneath the tablecloth.
Jesus.
And Yeah. So, you know, I got home and like I said, I went upstairs to my room. My mom came upstairs to check on me and she went through the whole laundry list. Like I said, you know, did I do something to upset you? Did your dad upset you? Did you not have a good time at the birthday party? Blah, blah, blah. You know, it kept going on and on. And then finally she said to me, which is very key, and I didn't piece it all together at the time, but years later, obviously, hindsight 2020, I did. And she said to me, she said, did he do something to you? I thought that was very interesting. So yeah, there was there, and I found out years later
he did it to your mom too, huh?
No, he didn't do it to my mom. He did it to my mom's sister, but my mom was well aware of the history of abuse that this man had with many people within the family, and yet she allowed me to be unsupervised by him on many an occasion. But that's a different dynamic, my relationship with my mom, and that's all going to be in my book.
Okay. So yeah. I won't go down to the dynamic of you and your mom and probably some resentment that was in there somewhere, but
yeah.
I would imagine. Sorry, I'm not laughing at your pain.
No, that's okay.
I'm laughing at the fact that like there's got to be resentment there. So it just gets me thinking though. So we'll leave your mom out of this conversation.
Thank you.
You know? But then how did you move that forward? Because my initial thing would be that you have an intimacy issue, a trust issue, which probably carried into many other relationships moving forward in your life.
As far as like being sexually intimate, if that's what you're grabbing, no, I don't actually. That's not an issue for me.
not now, but I mean, maybe early on.
No, not really. Huh. I can't say that. Trust would be an issue. Okay. You know, just talking in general about trust. I mean, I have very healthy body image. I have confidence. I mean, it's you know, this didn't – I mean, I plugged a lot of work and investment into my growth, my evolution, my healing. And I believe whatever it is that we've gone through in our lives, whether it's death of a family member, whether it's abuse, whether it's loss of a job, bankruptcy, divorce, whatever the case may be, I think there's always going to be a certain level of things as we get older, particularly that we have to grieve and we have to heal from. So every day is a healing journey for me, but I just continually am committed to becoming stronger, becoming more empowered. I'm really about paying it forward, being of service to others, because there's always somebody who's got it worse than you.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like I was just thinking to myself, and this probably sounds shitty. You know when you know when someone says like, "Oh, it probably sounds shitty." Probably the next statement after that is shitty. Just to be, but like, do you ever find yourself? You don't seem like a spiteful, vindictive person, so you probably don't. But do you ever find yourself thinking, you know, at a hierarchy of pain and difficulty when someone says, "Oh, I had to file bankruptcy," you're like, "Really? Like that's the worst." So I mean, like do you ever categorize? I know you don't want to judge because for them that probably is their moment of pain.
It's a good question. It's a very, very good question. You know, for me, it all comes back to whatever people, you know, whatever people are struggling with, whatever
it's
people.
It's theirs.
Whatever people fixate on or whatever people can't get beyond. That's just to me, that's indicative of you know, still having to do a lot of work. Really changing the mindset, because I'm not about victimology. I don't accept that from people that I care about. I don't accept it from clients. You know, there's a real block going on if somebody's not committed to jumping over the hurdles. And there's a lot of elements attached to that. And of course, that's all encompassed in my brand of living fearlessly. So yeah, you have to take massive risk. You have to overcome things, but you have to be committed to doing so. And life is forever a journey. And you know, who knows? I mean, we don't have a crystal ball. Anything unforeseen can happen to any of us at any given time. And for some people, it's a succession of things. There's, you know, multitude of things that happen simultaneously that people feel they have to overcome.
I was just going to be thinking about this whole idea of the victimization thing.
Yeah.
Does the person have, in your mind, the right to mourn whatever that do they have a mourning period in your mind, or is it buck up, shut up, move on?
know, I think mourning is very in its own separate category to victimology. I think everybody has the right to mourn, you know, whether you're mourning a lost childhood, whether you're mourning, in my case, having parents who protected me, knowingly allowed me to be abused. I take my dad out of that equation. I just want to make that perfectly clear, because my mom had never shared with my dad what my step-grandfather was. She knew that, and because of her own shame attached to that, she never shared that with him. Otherwise, I never would have been allowed to be in the presence of him. He never would have been allowed to vacation and stay in our house. A lot of things would have been much different, but that was information that my mom concealed for whatever dysfunctional reason.
What did your dad say when he found out?
Well, when that last incident of abuse came out, and I confirmed when my mom said, did he do something? And it was very clear we were talking about the same person and we knew exactly what we were talking about. I confirmed that. I verified that. And I had later that evening eavesdropped on a conversation that she and my dad were having in the living room. I was behind a door in another room with an earshot. And she was telling him while everybody was in bed. And he said, you know, he's going back to England tomorrow. He's never allowed back in this house. You know, my grandmother, he said, you know, she's welcome to join him where she can stay, but he's going. And so the very next day he took massive action, put him on a plane and adios. That was it. And my grandma did in fact stay behind. And it was years later that I found out that my grandmother, of course, because my mom's sister, so her daughter had been sexually abused, and it happened to his first children of his first marriage. It happened to my cousin. It happened to a lot of people. So that was information that my grandmother was also aware of.
I think that's so fascinating that both your mom and your grandma decided to, because of shame, just to keep it to themselves. And the carnage that just happened from that.
Yeah.
You know, it's mind-blowing.
It is, actually. And I mean, it more so is for me, given the fact that I'm now a mother. And I always knew it was wrong before I had children. I just intuitively, instinctively knew it was wrong. I knew it was wrong working in social services and hearing many a disclosure and having to go to court for people who are pressing charges against people for the same type of crime. You know, but when I became a mother, I mean, it became a totally different level of perspective, a totally different level of insight. And, you know, to me, I just don't know how you can roll over on something like that. If I knew that there was a known abuser in my community or in my family, my children would never, ever be allowed to be in the presence of that person. Mm-hmm. And I would never knowingly allow situations to be set up in which I knew abuse was going to occur and turn a blind eye. Like, I don't get that, but that speaks to me at a certain level of mental health.
I also think that it's in today's world, it's so hard sometimes to pick who that potential abuser will be.
That's true too.
And I was just going to say that sometimes my wife, I don't think she thinks about that because she didn't really have any drama in her life. Mm-hmm. And so she doesn't ever think about the what if. And I'm like, I don't know who that guy is, or I don't know that family. Like, I don't want her there, you know, because mm-hmm. I don't know that person. I have no idea what they're about. And so, you know, I think that I'm not an overprotective dad. That's not my thing either. Like, I breed independence for my kids, even at a young age. Sorry, I have some throat issues going on in my life right now, so I have constant don't worry, it's not important. It's not really part of the podcast conversation. we can talk about abuse. We can talk about abuse, but we're not talking about my throat issues. All right,
that is off limits. I'm glad we've got our priorities right here.
So, what an asshole I am. All right, so like, I think my point is that you just, in today's world, it's that. I guess what I'm trying to say is, how do you create that line of trust, protection, especially for someone like you?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm very fortunate in the fact that, because I do think this is another level of, I look upon it as a gift, you know, where I could look upon everybody as a potential perpetrator or somebody who has a hidden agenda. I don't. You know, for me, in my professional life, in my personal life, everybody starts off at the top. Everybody gets a blank slate. Everybody gets, you know, the benefit of the doubt. And only based on behavior, if there are things that deviate from what would be considered appropriate in my mind, or if it goes against the grain of a boundary that I've established, that I've been very vocal about, or people who know me would know it's characteristic that would be a boundary of mine. You know, and that's not to say one strike and you're gone. I've alienated you from my life. You know, and it would depend on the severity of what it is that we're talking about, because there's different levels of, we're humans, people make mistakes or people do things unintentionally. I mean, I get all that. I'm a very forgiving person. I'm very grateful for that.
Do you feel like you have to be? Because I know there's been other dramas in your life since this as well, right? So...
No, I don't. I don't feel like I have to. See, this is the thing about living fearlessly for me. I am very clear on who I am. I am very clear on my values. I'm very clear on my goals. I'm very clear on the types of people I will choose and elect to surround and be in the presence and the company of, my smaller circles, even smaller, because I, you know, I don't have a lot of time. I don't have a lot of extra energy to expend. So, you know, and we are a byproduct of who we choose to spend the most time with. So I'm very selective with who gets my energy. You know, I am naturally a very forgiving person. I don't know where my inner strength comes from. I try not to dissect it or analyze it too much, because I feel that if we sometimes get too much in our head and out of our heart and out of the core of who we intrinsically believe ourselves to be, then we end up doing ourselves a disservice.
Like at this point, like you're a well-formed individual, but my guess is that in your late teens, and you're going to clearly tell me I'm wrong, but in your late teens, mid-20s, maybe you weren't so formed and there was a lot of...
Oh, God, I was off the rails. Yeah. I was doing drugs. I was skipping school, got kicked out of school, got kicked out of my parents' home. I mean, you know, there was a lot of things that were brushed under the rug. And I really felt that and this is why part of what I say to people and how I choose to live my life, one of my mantras is be your own hero, be your own shiro, be your own leader. You know, I think if we kind of deviate from having all these unfair sometimes expectations of other people, I think we unintentionally set ourselves up for disappointment, because we think everybody looks at the world the way in which we do. Everybody makes decisions the way in which we do. And that's there can be a statement that's more false than that. And if you know, and the proof in that is how much dissension still exists in this world, you know, the culture and the climate of so-called leadership, you know, how many people are on medication, how many people have psychiatrists and psychologists. I mean, you know, if a lot of that is based on expectation. Holidays, people think that the holidays are going to go like the commercials. They don't. Everyone's at World War III. Not everyone. But, you know, so I just, you know, I focus on what my expectations are of myself. I focus on what my goals of the day are. And I, you know, that's put into practice, and I take massive action on that every single day.
How do you transcend that to your kids?
Well, you know, I've often said whatever it is that my children eventually decide to endeavor to do, and they would know by my example that everything I do derives out of a place of passion. You know, when you love what you do and you do what you love, you emit a certain kind of energy that transcends to other people, and people can legitimately and genuinely tell if you're authentically happy, if you're authentically enjoying your life. And so, you know, that's not to say that I'm a perfect mother. It's not to say that we don't have issues in our house. It's not to say that we don't have challenges. But at the end of the day, my children will always get thumbs up from me with whatever it is they decide they want to do, whether it's to be entrepreneurial, whether it's to take up a trade, whether it's to embark upon post-secondary education or not embark upon.
But that's not my, I guess that's not my question. My question is that you have these values you're trying to espouse to your kids.
Yeah.
And man, and you know, with these values, how do you, I mean, so I'm a huge, first of all, my biggest pet peeve of any parent is do as I say, not as I do. So, you know, I kind of have a rule that as my kids get older and they have chores, I will have chores with them. Mm-hmm. Not just their chores, but it's a team chore. Like, so let's clean the kitchen. Yeah. Let's work together. So I used to get so spitting angry at my mom when she would say, do as I say, not as I do. And I was like, well, what the hell does that mean? Like, even at 10, I thought that was just bullshit. I was like, So besides living in the way and doing things the way you want to model for your children, mm-hmm. how do you talk to them about this living fearlessly?
Well, you know, there's so many different things, particularly at their ages, where, you know, different situations will present themselves, whether it be something that they bring home as a discussion piece from school, something that they, didn't sit well with them, either because they were a participant in it or it was something that they observed and they didn't quite understand it. You know, so we talk about different things. I talk about strategies. I talk about, you know, the importance of using your voice. You know, as long as you're doing it in a way that's not hurting other people and it's kind and it comes from a place of love, you know, don't be scared to assert your own boundaries. If it doesn't matter if all the kids are doing certain things at school that you don't understand or it doesn't resonate with you at the heart level of what's comfortable for you personally, you know. So I'm very big on kids using their own voice. And that's even with me, you know, if they want to take me to task on something or question something that I've said, so they should. And I embrace that. I encourage that. And I've even said that in my sit down discussions with them. You know, nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. And because I really do declare, and I mean quite wholeheartedly, that my children are my greatest teachers. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I'm going to take note of what it is that they're bringing to my attention that they don't understand or that they wish to receive further clarification on. If they can't get it from me, who are they going to get it from? You know,
I mean, so it's funny when you talk about this idea of imperfections. I kind of get on myself.
I admit.
I'm not saying you do. Sorry. It wasn't towards you. It was. No, I agree with you. I have many. I was agreeing with you. I have many as well. So, but even today was a great example. So, you know, my son is, you know, he's 9 today. Super jazzed about his birthday.
Aww. Happy birthday.
Up real early. And as you probably know with your oldest, boys are a bit more spazzy than girls about certain things. And so he was bouncing around and then he started breaking into so I didn't grow up with birthdays being a big deal. My wife, you know, birthdays were like a medium deal, but not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And definitely presents were not at the center of anything. It was love, hugs, kisses, happy birthday. Yeah. So, you know, Mary didn't wrap any presents yet in the morning because she'd been waiting for something to show up. And you know, we talked presents. We got him a chessboard, a snack cup that has Star Wars on it, which I don't really get that one. But, all right. He was super psyched for it. He got this tiny little Egyptian or Middle Eastern camel that you can put stuff in. Gold's plated. Anyhow, not like real gold, but fake gold. Anyhow, so long story short. So this morning, none of the presents are ready. He starts crying. I got really annoyed. I'm like, just get over it. Get over it. So anyway, I go for a run. And I remember my run when I was 9. And my dad literally forgot my birthday the whole day. Like, didn't tell me happy birthday. Saw me in the morning. Got me up. Nothing. And I got back and I said, you know, and I sat him down. I remember when my dad forgot my birthday and how much that hurt my feeling. I'm really sorry that I wasn't kind to you this morning around your birthday. I'm sure you had a lot of desire to have presents first thing in the morning. I'm sure that bothered you. So I always try to think of it from their perspective with a limit. Yeah. You know, with a limit. So.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, that's, you know, and I love the fact that people can own up to their own mistakes and the mistake. You know, there really it's just it's about how do we choose to rectify it or acknowledge it or look at it from someone else's perspective, whether it would be the example that you cited about your child. But I think that's so important. You know, I think that's so important when it comes to building relationships, cultivating relationships, nurturing relationships. And it evolves us on our own path, you know, because if you don't acknowledge your own bullshit, you know, who are you to point the finger at someone else for what you declare or deem to be their bullshit?
Yeah, no, I agree. So what happened to you in your 20s? You know, when did you decide to go into this compassion-driven industry for 20-some years?
Well, I, again, as a result of what I had said earlier about being kind of kicked out of school, I took a couple years. I took a year. That's okay. I took about a year and a half off school. You know, a lot of my life lessons have had to be learned the hard way. And so I recall working at a health food store here locally in Dundas. And I would see a lot of my friends and people I recognized from school in different grades coming in on their lunch break and buying their lunch with their backpacks and going back to school. And I thought, you know what? Like, I was always kind of deemed in some regards ridiculously back then. But, you know, now it's ridiculous. But back then I was like one of the cool kids because many people still lived at home, regardless of the relationship they had with their parents, you know, but I was one of the youngest to have an apartment. I was living on my own. I was independent. I had the parties, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, like, I was responsible for all that. I had to pay my own bills and I had to clean up the mess after the party. And, you know, everybody was going to school to work towards something, you know, having future in mind. And I was like really going in circles. Like, I was on a dead end street and I recognized that. And I really bothered me because I have this dual personality. I mean, in my younger days, I had swam competitively. So I understood what it was to be self-disciplined. I knew what it was to have goals, to aspire. I met a lot of my goals. You know, I trained 6 days a week, twice a day for many years. One of the girls that I swam with actually went on to represent Canada in the Olympics, Joanne Millar. You know, so I went from having that kind of life and regimen and routine to a whole plethora of reasons of why I kind of fell off the rails a little bit. And it's like, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not happy with my life. I'm not really going anywhere. And so I decided to go back to high school. Of course, I didn't end up graduating with my intended graduated class. And it was then that I sat down with a guidance counselor and I knew that there was then an option to do a co-op placement at the CNIB, the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, in the social work department. So once I had that experience and I had that exposure, I thought, wow, this is fantastic. Like, I could really see myself doing something in this line of work, this vocation specifically, not necessarily with blind people going forward for the rest of my career, but helping people to some degree in some capacity.
What did you get out of it when you were doing it? Like, what was the emotional uptick that you were getting?
Well, it was just interacting with people. It was
self-worth.
There was self-worth. There was also, you know, kind of tapping back into what it was to have a positive focus, to feel driven, to feel motivated, to feel inspired, to look forward to waking up every day again and knowing I was going to be interfacing with people who were grateful, you know, who would smile and you know, they would recognize my footsteps. They would recognize my perfume. And, hey, Lisa, you know, you're back here again. How are you? You know, so it was just, and it was helping people help themselves. And when I saw that these people who either had been born blind or had lost their vision at different stages in their life for whatever the circumstance, and yet a lot of them were still very happy, jovial people, very friendly, very kind-hearted people.
I love, you know, those people. Like, those people, yeah, inspire the hell out of me.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I found my mojo again. And I that experience at that particular time in my life and getting myself, pulling myself out of the abyss of a whole bunch of things that had happened in my life that had never really been resolved, had never been handled, had never been talked about. You know, so I guess you could say that my healing journey really began with helping other people.
You know, you hear that sometimes. You hear that from people who say, I didn't start to heal until I gave myself to something else.
Yes, true.
In a healthy way, obviously.
Yes.
And so I could see why that would gravitate towards you. Did you, you know, at least you alluded to it, sounded like you did some therapy along the way here. Did you, is that correct?
No, actually.
Oh, no. Wow. That's not correct. You're like your own carpenter and builder of self.
And that's not because I'm not a supporter. I mean, I very much am a staunch supporter of people seeking, you know, counseling and therapy and all kinds of things. I just, because my life kind of, I've been on my own since 16. I put myself through both college and university. No grants, no loans, no help from my parents. I paid cash. So I was working in the field before I even graduated. And so because I was like super busy, again, this was the duality. So before I was partying, and then I got super committed to my career and growth opportunities, learning opportunities, training, school, academia. I absolutely fell in love with academia because I was focusing on what it was that I absolutely loved and derived a lot of pleasure from. And so because I had myself to support and because I had lofty goals, which required back in that day, additional workshops and education and tuition and books and all kinds of things, I didn't really at the time, you know, I mean, I know there's the adage, you know, you make time for what is important enough to you to do so and deem a priority. But for me, I was just so on the hamster wheel of what my schedules entail, because I was oftentimes working 2-3 jobs, going to school, doing a placement. I really didn't have the time or the luxury to say no to shifts or anything. I had to pay my own way. And then I got, you know, different times a little bit burnt out and I had to take care of myself. So I wasn't looking to fill whatever free time I had, which was minimal, to go speak to a therapist. And to be honest with you, because I started to see myself climb and I was really quite proud of myself and I started to feel like I was a productive person. I felt like I was a giving person. I felt like a contributor to society. That really was enough for me. I didn't need medication. I didn't need to go talk to somebody about my childhood. I'd kind of took what had happened in my childhood and used it to help me morph into the person I wanted to be going forward as a careerist, as an academic, as just somebody in the personal development world. So that was my therapy. It truly, truly was.
So, I mean, that's definitely a unique journey that not everyone can do because they have to be able to mentally sift and sit with and decide what they're going to keep, what they're going to shove away. And I don't want to say a closet because I mean, that sounds like you're just compartmentalizing stuff.
Right.
But that's a very difficult thing to do. But as you were talking, it kind of got me thinking, are you someone who, when you're into something, you're all in?
Yes.
You're very Buddha-esque with all of your, you're very much like,
I am.
This is the journey that I'm on and what?
Yes.
And these are the tea leaves, and I'm going to play these cards, or whatever other bad analogy I can put into the mix here. But you're very much about like zen about it, and I think that in some ways sounds like that's what's made it easy for you to come to terms with, accept, and thrive from the events that's happened in your life.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. Because I mean, there was a time in my life where I was angry. There was a time in my life where I was rebellious. I did act out. I made terrible, poor decisions for myself without recognizing the short and the long-term consequences. I was basically lashing out because I didn't feel that I had the guidance. I didn't feel like I had the unconditional love. I didn't have anybody who in a parental role should, when they decide to have children, take those kids under their wing and say, okay, you know, it's like, you know, it's, and this is touched upon in my book too. My mom died of cancer in 2014. And, you know, it's okay to talk about cancer. And the thing is, it's like, whether you're talking about one member of your family who has cancer, or you've got one kid in your family that plays hockey, it consumes the whole family. Everybody's impacted. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, for all the things that were brushed under the rug where my abuse was concerned and the different element added to that, given not only that it was a family member, but more what was more abusive about that whole situation was that my own mother turned a blind eye and allowed years of unnecessary abuse to occur.
Well, and it would seem to me not even your own mother, like your grandmother. So like you had this history of women who accepted negative consequences upon their family member for the lack of having the spine, I mean, for a brutal way to probably say it, but the lack of having the spine to stand up to a man and say, what are you doing? Get away from my family. And you just, that was the pattern that you saw with people who were supposed to love you, protect you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's...
But to get back to the original point, I mean, yes, I did harbor a lot of unhealthy feelings. And at the end of the day, you know, because nobody who should have been on the receiving end of being in a therapy session to allow me and give me permission to channel those feelings and to feel validated and to feel heard and, you know, to heal together as a family. I mean, I it became very clear that whatever it was that I was holding on to, it was internally hurting myself. It was impacting my choices, my livelihood, my relationships, my concept of self, everything. So when I became very clear on the fact that the only person who was really truly getting hurt by this and negatively impacted was myself, mm-hmm. I thought, well, I'm all I've got. You know, I'm all I've got, so I've got to make this work for me. And so, yeah, I had to really work to get out from underneath that rock of, you know, hating the world and resenting my family, you know, and different things that of that innocent age that were truly out of my control. And so when I realized, okay, well, you know what, Lisa, you can't go around harboring the past. You can't live in the past. You're not in the past. You got to go forward. And what does that mean for you? You know, if you figure out what's going to make you happy, what do you derive passion from, you know, what makes you feel good about yourself, and go do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. So everything in my life, and that's not to say that I haven't had mentors along the way, that's not to say that I haven't had great teachers or friends, or, you know, coming from Dundas, which is a spectacular community of people as a whole, but I mean, the journey was really mine to walk. And so I stepped into it. I finally got out of what wasn't serving me, and I walked into what was serving me. And when I got a taste of that, I wanted more, and I just continued to put one foot in front of the other, and it became a new experience, mm-hmm. or it became a new dynamic, or a new project, or a new partnership, or a new collaboration, or a new vision, but it became something new each and every mm-hmm. time. Like, I can't stand complacency. I you know, when people talk about what are you scared of, I'm scared of mediocrity. I don't deal well with mediocrity, and it might be because I've had nothing but you know, transition in my life. My life has been constant transition, and having to adjust and having to take risks and having to step into it, and make the decision to rise. And so that's what I've done. And now it's become habit forming, and I love it.
Well, that's, first of all, inspiring. Second of all,
thank you.
I could keep going on this topic. However, I need to do my fast five. And what I want to do,
sure.
fast five, I actually want to talk about where you're at now. Like, what are you doing now? Because I know that you're super fired up about it. You've got a bunch of different projects going on, and pick and choose which ones you want to talk about. But, you know, we've got about 10 to 15 minutes left. So are you ready to do fast five?
Okay.
I need more enthusiasm than that. That was like...
No, I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably also like, all right, I've been on a lot of podcasts, and this is just a different name for the same shtick that everyone else does.
No, not at all. Not at all.
All right. I'm just kidding. All right. Question one. What was your first job ever?
Probably babysitting.
Yeah. I would usually follow up with, what did you learn from that? I guess, what did you learn from that?
I learned what it was to be responsible for the safety and the care of somebody else, which was also very healing and very nurturing for me.
Can I tell you my first and only babysitting job I got fired from?
Okay.
It was really close family friends of ours, and the kids weren't. I think the two kids I was responsible for, I think I was probably 14 or 15, and they were like 12, and maybe I was 13, and maybe he was like 10 and 8 mm-hmm. were the kids. And the only thing that the mom said was, "I don't want you guys running around. Just sit and watch TV." Like, so what's the one thing we do the whole time? Run around.
Run around.
Yep. and so, like, we didn't watch any TV, which is what she said to do. And we ran around for an hour and a half straight, and we hear her come in the driveway, and we sit down, and sweat's just dripping off our faces. And, like, she was like, "Were you guys running around?" Maybe. Oh. Maybe. So I got fired. All right. So, all right. Question two, who do you admire?
Well, I admire so many people for so many different reasons, but the one person who's always been an intangible mentor and helped me throughout the course of my journey when I felt completely alone in the shits is Oprah Winfrey. Huh. Oprah Winfrey. Yeah, lots of parallels between her life and my life, her set of circumstances, and just in terms of two things that I've endeavored to do. And although we're at different levels on the hierarchy of career, we've done a lot of very similar things. And so she being a woman who's also a sexual abuse survivor, you know, a woman who didn't take no for an answer, a woman who believed in herself even when other people didn't. And despite all the rejection and the door slammed in her face, she saw something in herself that she knew she had to offer and impart to the rest of the world. And she stuck to that. And I admire her so much for that.
That's awesome. Question three, what animal best represents your management style?
Ah, interesting. I'm going to say I always have felt a bit of a drawn towards the Black Panther.
I was going to say tiger. Damn it. Go ahead. Sorry. Why the Black Panther?
Well, I like the Black Panther because I find it's very strong. You know, there's a certain presence about it, but it's very mysterious and it's very
it's sleek too. It's like sleek and
yes.
muscular and like
yes.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay.
Yep.
All right, question four.
Okay.
What behaviors irritate you the most in your colleagues?
I'll go beyond colleagues and just say people in general. People who are passive aggressive and people who fall under the umbrella of victimology and blame.
So just a general category of anyone who plays those games.
Yeah, I have a hard time with people who don't take personal responsibility and make better choices for themselves. I understand the rationale and I understand, you know, certain reasons why people get stuck. I just have a hard time for what I've gone through with my own experiences. And I know that it's all relevant to who we are and how we're wired and genes are very different. And, you know, but I know what it is to have nobody in my life and still be able to make choices because I understand what a gift it is to even be here and to not make something worthwhile of myself and to not do something productive in the way that it benefits other people, I think is very selfish.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also, you know, that was kind of my point earlier on about saying when people are having a difficult time with a bankruptcy or a breakup,
yeah,
in your mind kind of going like, all right, really? Like, really? That's your biggest worry? And, you know, this is going back 15 years ago, I guess. And I was living in San Jose, and at the time I was like trying to poke around with faith and what did it mean for me. So I was going to this Bible study at Stanford, and I met a guy there, and we were chit chatting with the priest, who ended up marrying my wife and I, by the way.
Oh wow!
Really great guy, and I was always fascinated with him because he was an African American priest. Catholic priest, which you don't see that every day. So I was really fascinated by like that whole, like, why'd you do it? So anyhow, this guy and I were sitting there and he was just complaining. I mean, about like, his job and why no one wants to hang out with him and why no girls want to date him. And he was just going on, and I was sitting there and JP was the priest, and JP and I were sitting there looking at him. And all of a sudden I just said, shut up, shut the fuck up, shut up. And he just stopped mid-talk, and he looked at me, and I said, you have a great job. You have a great family. You're a good person. I said, stop your fucking whining. Get up off this couch and get on with your life. I said, I've lost my dad, my grandparents. I don't talk to my brothers. You know, I've had this happen, that happen. And you know what? I got a sunny disposition because life could be a hell of a lot worse. So shut up. And we get up, and I'll never forget, JP looks at me like, so Jason turns towards me and JP's behind him. And JP looks at me with this big smile on his face saying, thank you for saying that. But he couldn't say it. And like, you know, and at the time I was 30, JP was 40. So he's still a young guy. And I think he in his head was thinking all the exact same things I was saying, but he couldn't say fuck and shut up or any of those things. So, all right. Question five of Fast Five.
Okay.
So kind of the opposite of the last question, what kind of situation brings out the best in you?
Oh, I love being witness. If not a participant, I love bearing witness to people just paying it forward, being of service, people who are thriving, people who are giving, contributing, you know, to see the recipient and how that person, it's made their whole day, or it lights them up, or it invigorates them or inspires them. I just love being witness, if not a participant, to the yummy stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. Great questions.
What I want to do is spend just the last 5 or 6 minutes really talking about where you're at now and what you're doing. I know you've got a podcast. You've got a book coming out. I think you're climbing Mount Everest, and I think you're solving cancer, but I'm not sure if that's in the cards or not. So what do you do? What are you doing right now, Lisa?
Oh, you're hilarious. So yes, you're right. I've got 2 books that are in the process of coming out. One's going to take a little bit longer because, like I say, it's my adult nonfiction. So my PR publicist, she's put my book, my manuscript, in the hands of literary agents, which is sparking some interest. Once I get somebody who specifically is the right fit for me, then we're going to go traditional publishing house, which is unlike my 4 children's book. The last and final children's book, the 4th one, is in the process. It just completed its final edit, and it's just nearing the beginning of printing and publishing.
What's the name of that going to be?
That one is called Kismet Tales from Happy Trails. Kismet? Children's book. Yeah, that's children's book.
I was going fiction and murder love story. That's no. So.
No. No, that stuff doesn't sell for kids.
At least not semi-normal ones. So,
But let's not forget who's buying the kids' books. It's the parents. So I don't think I would get the thumbs up on that one.
Correct. So you've got to get the kids' book coming out, the 2 novels. Now, the name of your podcast is Live Fearlessly?
Living Fearlessly with Lisa McDonald. So, yes. I go live every Friday on the Contact Talk Radio Network, 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern.
Is that AM, PM?
Oh, sorry, AM, yeah. And very grateful to the loyal listenership and the podcast subscribership. I'm now hovering somewhere around 160,000 based on the last stats I received from Cameron Steele, who's the network owner, who's been fantastic and very pivotal in my journey, particularly where radio and podcasting is concerned. I 2 weeks ago was sought out by Arianna Huffington. She's asked me to be a contributor and a writer for her new pet project, her
Thrive
site.
Global?
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm having the same conversation right now.
Oh, really?
Yes. So.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm not a writer so much. So we're actually talking about me distributing my podcast through them.
Yes. I'm going to be doing the same as well. Yeah. So that's fantastic. See, we're traveling in the same circles. I love it.
It's so funny how I don't even think I have a successful podcast. I just think that I happen to be okay at this. And
don't sell yourself short ever.
I'm not selling it short. I know you're going to give me a pep talk, but I'm not selling.
Yes,
I'm not selling myself short. I'm a realist, and you know, I'm definitely no Oprah or Lisa McDonald. However, I believe that
I'm not. Okay.
But
I'm going to jump through this computer in a minute.
Let me give you what I was going to say. But I believe in what I do. Yes. And I believe in the format that I do for me. And so regardless of my listenership right now, I'm kind of sticking to it because some people out there really like it, and some people who are in a position to make things happen really like it, and so I just kind of keep plugging forward and doing my thing, and
good for you.
So this is obviously isn't about me right now. So back to you. So you got the you got the Thrive Global thing going on as well, and the radio show and a book. How are you finding time to cure cancer?
Well, that's unfortunately a bit on the back burner. I'm going to have to leave that to the scientists and the people in the medical field.
All right. I mean, if you're going to – listen, I know you're not a glory hound, so I get it.
No.
I get it. And do you have a website where people can get a hold of you?
Yes. Now, my website – thank you for bringing that up. I can still be found at lisamcdonaldauthor.com, and McDonald's spelled M-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. It's been under reconstruction. We're about to do a relaunch, and we're a little bit behind schedule only because the web designer unfortunately received or encountered some pretty traumatic personal circumstances impacting his family. So, of course, everybody's been very supportive that way. And, of course, 2 years of podcast links that have to be uploaded. You can imagine that takes quite a bit of time.
So painful. I just launched a website, had to hire someone to do it, and because I can't be bothered. I only have 2 years too. So I feel your pain. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I feel his pain. It's not my pain. It's his pain. I'm his pain. And I'm sure he can't wait to get me off his roster. Yeah. But
And are you speaking anywhere coming up? Do you do speaking engagements?
I have done speaking. I spoke at Harvard last year, and I was the convocation speaker at the college where I'm the alumni, part of the alumni, Mohawk College. So, of course, I indicated earlier in your interview here that I went to both college and university. So I did some peer mentoring at the college, which then very graciously led to me being asked if I would be a convocation speaker for graduating students last year. Such a humbling experience. So surreal coming full circle that way. But yeah, I've spoken at many events. I'm right now focused on blogging. I've been, again, it took quite a while to get my manuscript done. I'm doing a lot of behind the scenes things. I mentor clients. So a lot of my time is spent mentoring other people in their own journey. It's also further getting myself out there in terms of the radio, the podcasts, and doing research to get additional stellar guests. And every guest that I've ever had, whether they be household name or non-household name, they've all been fantastic in their own right, and certainly grateful to each and every single one of them for gifting myself and the listeners with their nuggets of information, their wisdom, their passion, their everything. So yeah, awesome. So things are going really well. I'm super ramped up right now. I'm super busy, you know, part of the C-suite, you know, just really, really busy, but absolutely loving what I do. I'm very grateful for every aspect of my journey.
Awesome. Well, Lisa McDonald, extraordinary woman of the year in my eyes. Thank you so much for coming on Executives After Hours. I appreciate your time, energy, and willingness to sit down and open yourself up to me.
Well, thank you so much, James, for the lovely invitation and for the gift of your time and for affording me this beautiful opportunity. And as you know, I'm going to be reaching out to you with dates of when it's convenient for you to come on my show, because I love your energy. I love your energy, and I love how candid you are, and I love how off the cuff you do things. It's really nice to get away from how people do things that are normally quite scripted and very predictable. I like the fact that this is all unpredictable. So thank you.
Thank you for the nice words. Have a wonderful week.
You too, my friend. You take care and all my best.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.